Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm so happy to be joined again today by one of our recurring guests, Sarah Hawley, who is the lead and owner of Minnesota Childcare Health Consultants. She's a public health nurse, and she spends her time, and her team spends their time, out in childcare settings all over the state, supporting quality and healthy childcare for young children. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Priscilla. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back. I always enjoy podcasting with you.
Well, we always learn so much. And as we were saying before we hopped on, we could talk about all these topics for a lot longer than we do, but we're trying to make these really accessible to everyone and useful. And today we're going to talk about injury prevention in the early childhood, setting with young children. I mean, accident reports are prevalent. We've got toddlers who are just learning to walk. You have staff. You have all sorts of human beings trying to keep them safe, themselves safe, and the children safe. And so let's just talk a little bit about that idea of injury prevention in childcare. What is so important about that? And why do we need to be talking about it on this podcast today?
Yeah, really important. So thanks for bringing up the topic and addressing this, because I think it's really, really important. And there's several aspects that, you know, we kind of want to get into and cover. But I would say, first of all, if you think about it, and if you read a lot of the research, most injuries are actually preventable. They're usually predictable and preventable. When you think about the injuries with young children, the most common ones, they result from burns, poisoning, choking, or suffocation.
Wow.
I know. A lot of times the injuries to young children occur when they're tired, and children are more likely to suffer injuries when they're in an unfamiliar setting or surrounding, of course. Mm. So I think if you think about, you know, young children, they're learning, you know, they're exploring, they're developing new skills all the time, which is always going to involve some challenge and some risk. But it's really our responsibility, or who's ever working with these young children, to keep them safe by ensuring the safest environment possible.
Right. And that kind of speaks to the best overall quality early childhood environment that, you know, we talk a lot about routines. We talk a lot about predictability, because you were just mentioning the fact that those injuries are happening when things are unfamiliar, because kids are curious, so they're going to try to figure something out if there's something different. But the statistics of the things that happen to children, that's really scary to think about those things that you listed: burns, suffocation, choking, and also the hope that we can prevent those things. So how do you go about doing that in the early childhood setting?
Right. Well, it starts with a lot of planning, like pre-planning. Planning for children's safety is going to be the most effective way to prevent injuries. I would say with that, there's really four things. So active supervision, of course, your space arrangement, so arranging it safely, developmentally appropriate programming and activities, and then having really good injury prevention policies in place is super important.
That's for sure. Because active supervision, when you think of those, when you look at like the licensing reports that come through frequently, daily, I believe, and there are a lot of things that come up as active supervision issues. And so let's start with leaders in the setting, and then like how they set their teams up for success. What do you recommend when you're looking at that active supervision area? Because that's really very, very wide.
Oh, absolutely. It is. Yeah. So with active supervision, you mentioned the adults or the, you know, the leaders. Mm-hmm. I think they need to be very involved. They need to be aware, and they also need a background in early childhood so that they are appreciative of young children's behaviors, or at least some knowledge of that. They would be in the best position to keep young children safe. So lots to consider, though, when you think about detailed active supervision. The first thing is just simple, just strategic positioning of staff.
Yes.
You know, so that you're standing nearby the young children, so that you can intervene if needed, but also that you can hopefully prevent injuries from occurring. You know, an adult's presence is going to serve as a reminder to the children, like, you know, there's eyes on me, but it also, yeah, like you said, it's going to enable you to intervene quickly. And then you want to make sure that staff are positioned so that they can see all areas of the room, that there's no blind spots. That's really important. You know, so if it's outdoor on the playground, if you think that there's a tunnel and children are inside the tunnel, you know, they can't be out of sight. So, that, you know, right, positioning a staff person that they can monitor when children are inside the tunnel, and then positioning, you know, your classroom so that there's not like tall bookcases that are, you know, hiding the dramatic play area, that sort of thing. Scanning and circulating throughout the room also, you know, just positioning yourself close, like I said, it's going to help you intervene if needed, but then just circulating so that you do see all the different areas. And we don't want staff bunched up, of course.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I know, you know, it's time that they want to catch up with each other, you know, when they're outside and stuff, but that's really not the purpose. We need staff, you know, intervening with the children and stationed at different areas.
Definitely.
And you mentioned, you know, the things we've seen, I don't know if that was before we got on or just now, the things we've seen in the news with children, counting children should be part of the routine practice, and especially during transitions. So you know how many kids you went outside with, and you know how many you come inside with. So making sure that you're counting them frequently. Name to face recognition is really important too, knowing where each child is. And then being familiar too with the children's abilities. You know, so if you've got a 2-year-old who's really, really active, and maybe they're fascinated with climbing now, just simple instructions, you know, that, you know, we climb up the ladder, we slide down the slide, you know, we come down the slide, so that, you know, you're establishing those clear and simple safety rules, you know, things inside, like inside we walk, you know, walking feet, just simple rules that the young children can understand. And then also just being aware of potential hazards. Really good practice every morning to do just a sweep of both the indoor and the outdoor activities. You never know. Maybe the space is used on the weekend or the evening by another group. Especially if you're in a church, that happens a lot. And maybe they left some cleaning solution out, or, you know, maybe the cleaners were there and they vacuumed and the safety plugs came out of the outlets.
Right.
Just taking a look at the area just so that it's set up, and just knowing, like, outside, if there's an area that gets real slippery when it rains, maybe that's off limits for a bit. So just being aware of all of that.
Oh, yeah. And when you think about, too, you were talking about knowing the children's abilities and being aware of the fact that sometimes children don't understand their skill level. And so they may think they can do all of this stuff. And they may start climbing and get to the top of the climber and go, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get down, and just might let go. Or that's why the positioning is so, so important in spreading out. And that I'm glad you mentioned too, that really knowing where every single child is, each child in your group, having that name to face recognition for the leaders and the educators to know, okay, where's Josie right now? Because I know she's been really into putting stuff in her mouth in this near the sandbox area. Is she over there? Is there a staff by her? I mean, those kind of things. And ideally in a beautiful world where staffing isn't a huge issue.
Yeah.
And the priority, I think, for the folks out there right now who are dealing with the challenges due to staffing, making sure that you and your co-teachers, if you're in a classroom setting, have a chance to connect and say, I noticed this. This is something new that we really need to get on our radar, so that you can work together to make sure you're achieving success and safety for all. Yeah. And that kind of leads me to that safe space arrangement a little bit more too. Like, when you're talking about bookshelves and places where kids can be hiding and not be seen, I think when I think back to my time in the classroom, I always tried to make it that if I was sitting at the table, I could see the whole classroom space, the right. corners, everything. If I'm at the door, same thing. And that was the case from all vantage points. And so going to each of those places as you're setting up and saying, can I see everything?
Yeah, absolutely. And considering traffic flow too.
Yes. Oh, you know, definitely. Yeah.
And not having huge, large open spaces where it encourages running, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, we mentioned the blind spots. Proper fall zones on the playground are really important. You know, that you've got enough space, that everything's not too bunched up. Looking at when in the classroom, when it's nap time, you need to put the cots down. Do you have enough, you know, it should be at least 2 feet between each cot, preferably. So just looking at your space and planning it ahead of time, just trying to arrange it to, you know, minimize any injury risk is really, really important.
Yeah, because we don't, I mean, in the early childhood setting, there's not a huge need for a lot of bulky furniture. I mean, you need tables, you need chairs, you need shelving to store the toys. But if you find yourself as an educator adding more things, that's where you start to get less and less space for all those cots to fit comfortably. And it just, it does create more challenges for children to get around and for adults to get around. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
adults
you think
have to be careful too. Yeah.
Yeah. Nap time and tripping on those cot legs, they kind of stick out a little bit.
Right. And I have experienced a couple of adults falling, tripping over a toy in a classroom or that sort of thing. So yeah, you do really need to do some strategic planning of the area, as well as the other thing is making sure that you have developmentally appropriate activities for the children. That'll help minimize risk as well. You know, just making sure that they match the needs and the skills of the kids that are in your group. I always refer to the outdoor play equipment. So you have to look at the age group, the heights for that. That is so important, especially if you're in a program and maybe you buy a new building that already has a play structure there. You've got to make sure that the height, that it's appropriate for the age and the size of the children. Look at the manufacturer's indications, because it will have on there the age and the height. Playground injuries are just so common. So it's important to take a good look at that and do some planning there to help prevent the injuries. Just make sure everything's developmentally appropriate for the age group that you're with.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about, so this time of year in Minnesota, the snow is gone and we're getting outside more. And so odds are, there's an uptick in those injuries. Do you notice that in your work that, ooh, spring, that's like retrain the brain kind of thing? Or
yeah, absolutely. And it's also a really good time for staff after the snow melts and everything to go out and look at their play area. Do we need to replenish? You know, they should have a shock absorbing surface on the ground. So whether that's pea gravel or wood chips, does that need to be replenished so that there's enough fill? And looking at it, you know, after it's been covered up with snow for the whole winter. But yeah, we do. Once spring hits, we do unfortunately see more of an uptick in those injuries.
Yeah. And also I'm thinking too, as the snow melts, there's treasures that are uncovered that could have been hidden over the winter that you really need to be aware of. And if you go out in the, you know, later in the day, by the, maybe the morning groups didn't see those treasures, but by afternoon, after the sun has been shining and the warmth and all of that, they're more on the surface. And I think too, especially going back to your appropriate levels, I think for folks who use park spaces for their play area, you know, to really be aware of what is at the park. So when you're going on a walking field trip, let's say to a neighborhood park, having one staff go ahead and scan the area before you let all the kids just run, because that place isn't monitored.
Right. And that should be in your policies, that there is a daily check before kids. You know, I mentioned that with the indoor area, but just also outdoor. And if you use a nearby park, to have a staff person, if possible, go over there and take a look, just because you're not sure what another group has left or what before the kids get there. Yeah, that's really, really important in injury prevention.
And so when going back to the developmentally appropriate programming and activities, so many folks and so many classrooms are multi-age and family childcare multi-age. That is challenging because you're running the gamut of abilities and also chokeable items and all of that. So when you talk with folks about setting up that space, I mean, I'm just thinking about free play, which could be tricky because, and also if you have children who have unique learning needs, there might be a child who's really, really oral, and they're going to take something that maybe their peer at that age won't take and put in their mouth, but because that's how they explore the world, they're going to put it in their mouth. So what are you seeing as far as kind of perfect plans, not perfect because nothing's right. ever perfect, but preparations to allow for that? Because I think that's hard.
Yeah. And especially in family childcare, maybe putting it at a little bit higher level where the 2-year-old who puts everything in their mouth isn't going to be able to access it, but you know, the 6-year-old can grab it, that sort of thing. And then it just goes back to that supervision and being aware of the children's abilities, you know, just being familiar with the child and just closely supervising them. And if, again, being close that you could intervene if something happened.
Definitely. Definitely. So you mentioned throughout this policies and procedures and how important those are to have in place. Let's talk about those when you think about prevention.
Yeah. So I mentioned some of the most common injuries are the poisoning, the burns, choking, suffocation. You should have policies on those for sure. Preventative policies. So poisoning, you know, just having a plan of where are medications stored, where are cleaning supplies, that they're always inaccessible to children. And then laying out your burn policies, no hot coffee in the classrooms would be one. Children don't have access to the kitchen. Back to the coffee, even if it's in a covered mug, it should not be in the classroom with children because we all know spills happen, stuff gets yes. knocked over. Choking prevention, dicing up the food, you know, it's recommended. The national standards are 1/4 inch or smaller for infants and 1/2 inch or smaller for toddlers. So that's really important. Suffocation prevention, you know, not having plastic bags is accessible to children. Training on safe sleep for infants, you know, no loose bedding or pillows, obviously, or blankets in the cribs. You want to have traffic and pedestrian accidents when, you know, children are getting dropped off in the morning. They shouldn't hop out of their parents' car and go running across the parking lot.
Oh,
you
gosh.
Know, supervise hand in hand. So just having all of those policies and procedures in place. And then the biggest thing is to train the staff on those and not just hand them the policy manual and ask them to read it. Because we all know, I mean, who wouldn't zone out on that? You know, let's be real. So they need some really good active training on that. And then just other things, just having a plan for, I mean, you could go on and on with this because injuries potential is everywhere with young children, but just practicing fire drills, practicing tornado drills during tornado season, you know, and having really good policies that address really any potential injury, which yes. is, you know, a lot, even major disasters and weather related things, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned earlier, the accident reports, having procedures for those, if something does happen, you know, how are parents notified? What do you document? You know, what are your first aid practices, making sure everyone's trained in first aid and CPR, which, you know, of course is a licensing rule, but just making sure you stay up to date on that, but just having really good specific policies, sharing them in your parent policies so parents are aware, and then just getting the staff trained in on them. Super, duper important.
That's for sure. And when you think about the training too, and I find this for my own memory, is to tie stories of real life experience with those policies and procedures and kind of here's why we have this, because not that you want to scare people, but it keeps it more locked in your memory when there's some direct story or experience, and even opening it up to the staff and just saying, does anybody want to share a situation where you felt like, oh golly, this could have been a disaster if we didn't have this policy in place, but I knew what to do. I think that that's instead of, as you said, handing them the handbook and saying, read this and then sign off on it, having it more of a conversation and a discussion-based training with your teams and doing it more regularly, not just a one and done, but
yes,
you know, revisiting these policies and procedures regularly when you have opportunities to be together, which we know is rare in the early childhood. It's not like everybody has all these times for meetings during the day. But if you're together and you're talking about things, infusing reminders for these really critical policies is helpful.
Yeah. And staff, like I said, do need to be trained before they work with the children. And then you're right, Priscilla, regularly, you know, whether that's at a staff meeting or, you know, if they've got, you know, days where they're closed and they go over things. I mean, it needs to be on a regular basis. And you're right. Those stories can bring up things too. They're eye openers. Like, yes. Oh my God, I never thought of that. When you hear some of these crazy stories, like one with the poisoning prevention is a staff person's purse on their desk. Oh, yeah. A lot of people wouldn't think of it. Well, I have seen situations where children have gotten in there and gotten their medication or eaten their lipstick or something. So the story is really kind of hit at home.
Yes. Yeah. One of the things that comes to mind, and that's exactly what I'm talking about, that story. And I'm thinking about when I was teaching, one of the kids loved to tip back on their chair, you know, at the table and went back, hit his head super hard, turned out to be okay. But oh my goodness, unnecessary. Because if that child would have been reminded, oh, you know what? All the legs are on the floor,
right?
No tipping back. And, you know, and if someone would have been close, they would have been able to catch him before he went all the way back and really knocked his head on the linoleum part of the classroom floor.
Right.
And it was a big goose egg in the back of his head. And you had to call the family because they were going to come and feel that and go, oh my gosh, what happened? Fill out the accident report, all of those things. But that, as you mentioned in the opening lines of the everything, so many of these things are so preventable by just how alert we are and how prepared we are.
Yes, I would totally agree. They are typically predictable and preventable, but that's having those good policies in place and training everyone and making sure that the training is recurring so that, you know, all the staff know, you know, that supervision piece is just huge. I think it's really a combination probably of close supervision and then safety proofing the environment and training of the staff.
Really important key facts. And I know that there's resources available so that people don't have to start all these things from ground zero. There's tools out there that can support building these policies and creating those ahead of time. So it's not all on the shoulders of the provider, but there's support out there.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. We have, through Minnesota Child Care Health Consultants, we have policies and procedures because we've thought about all of this. You know, so they're kind of ready to go covering everything. So that could be a supplement to a center's own policies. And yeah, I'm sure there's lots of resources online and through the state as well, through DHS. They've got some guidelines for developing policies and procedures. And then we have the detailed book.
Yeah. And connecting with your colleagues and your peers in the field.
Absolutely.
To say, you guys do. And I think that also helps with everyone's mental health, is to be able to say, I'm not in this alone. There's support out there. It's a daunting thing to try to prevent all these injuries because it could be really scary every day, but the support that's available and the planning and also the training is really key. Well, thank you, Sarah. I will have you back very soon to talk about more things that create healthy early childhood environments. And this was a great conversation.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Priscilla.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.